Hey, what's good? This is Rich, and you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we talk making money, saving money, and getting out of debt, all while having some fun along the way. And on today's show, Marcus and I are talking real estate with a guest that owns properties all over the United States. But before we get into that, quick heads up, I had the chance to appear in the Military Money podcast hosted by Lacey Langford. And whether you're in the military, military adjacent, or just not military at all, this episode has something for everybody. You can check it out by visiting paybow.co/MILMONEY. That's paybow.co/MILMONEY, mil money. And also, just so you know, we're going to be off next week because we got life happening. As for today's PB episode, we're talking to Dustin Heiner, who is the man behind Master Passive Income, a blog and podcast about investing in real estate rental properties. He believes each person has a unique and inspiring story to help others either start investing in real estate or fuel the fire for the passion for the business they love. And if you get that reference, you get points with the fire. So here's our conversation with Dustin, and we hope you enjoy. Welcome to the show, Dustin.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here with you guys.
And for people who aren't familiar, tell the PMB family a little bit about yourself.
So I love traveling. I have a family. I have a wife and four kids. And because I'm blessed to have rental properties, we travel the world. So what we love to do, I don't have a job because I quit my job because I invest in rental properties. But we love to travel. So in 2017, right after I quit my job, I was 37 years old when I quit. Right after I quit my job, we went on a 6-week trip around Japan, drove like 2,000 miles all around the island of Japan. Then last year, we did 6 weeks around 11 different countries in Europe, which was an amazing blast. And then this year, we went from the East Coast, from Florida, all the way up to Washington, D.C. and New York, driving for 4 weeks. So we love traveling. We love being together. But I love teaching people how to invest in real estate.
And before you got into real estate, and of course, now I think you say you're successfully unemployed. I forgot exactly what the term is that we came up with. Is that it?
Successfully unemployed. Absolutely.
That's awesome, man. So before you got into real estate, what were you doing and kind of what was the story leading up to that point where you walked away and actually decided that you wanted to get into real estate?
Yeah, I am definitely just a normal guy, just a normal person that had a normal job and decided, let me start doing something different. So I was working a job. I worked at the Fresno County. I was working for the government. I was doing a regular IT job, you know, slaving away. And so my wife just had our fourth child. I came back from paternity leave and I was working for about a week. And then on a Friday, I think it was at 1 p.m., I got a phone call from my boss's boss at his secretary. And his secretary says, Dustin, you know, the boss's boss wants to see you. Would you please come to his office? And I said, yes, okay. This is weird. Nothing like this has ever happened before. And so I immediately start to sweat. I immediately start to think, what did I do wrong? You know, I've only been back a week. You know, what could have happened? I've got plenty of seniority. Like, I just started running all these things through my mind. And so I get up not knowing what's going to happen. And I start walking down the hallway, long hallway to my boss's office. And as I started getting closer, my feet started feeling like lead, like just couldn't move my feet. Just even though I kept walking, I just felt worse and worse. And I started sweating, getting anxious. And then it dawned on me that before I left, maybe 2 or 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks before I left, some people had rumors going around of potential layoffs because it was like 2007, 8, 9, when the market started changing. Anyways, long story short, there was a lot of issues and they were talking about layoffs, but nothing really concrete. But as I'm walking to my boss's door, it's starting to sink in. Like, this is new. Something is different for me that I am probably going to get laid off. So as I'm walking, my feet get heavier and heavier. I'm sweating. I'm anxious. I'm thinking about how am I going to support my family, my four kids, you know, especially my newborn. And I get over to my boss's office. The door is closed. And I look at his secretary and she sheepishly says, hey, Dustin, go ahead and have a seat. He'll be out in a minute. You know, you'll be able to see him in a minute.
This sounds horrible, by the way.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And she's looking at me consolingly because she knows what's going on, but she can't tell me. She's a sweet lady. Like, she was terrific. And then the door opens like maybe a minute later. But all the while, I just keep sweating more and more because I'm just worried about how I'm going to provide for my family. And so the door finally opens And a lady walks out with a piece of paper in her hand. And the piece of paper is basically her layoff notice. And I could see it on her eyes and she's really distraught. And my boss says, "Dustin, come on in." So I walk into his office and lo and behold, I have my own piece of paper, a pink slip saying, "You have 2 weeks to find another job. You're going to be done here." And so I get done talking to my boss. I walk back to my desk and I allow myself 5 minutes to feel bad. I say, "You know what? You feel, you know, sulk, you know, you're worried, all the stuff that you went through, all the hard work you've done, only 5 minutes." So I gather myself after the 5 minutes. I said, "Okay, now it's time. I need to make a change." So there's two things that I made a change. Number one, I said, "Now I need to find a job to provide for my family." So I started calling up every single other department in the county that I have a good working relationship with, because I'm a hard worker. Everybody knew me as hard worker and produced good results. And praise the Lord, I was able to find a job really quick. Like, I literally didn't get laid off. I went from one job to the other without getting laid off. So that was a huge blessing. The second thing that I learned was I do not ever want to have somebody having me dependent on them to give me money. So I decided, you know what? I've been toying with real estate. I've been toying with the idea of doing that. I need to become an investor. So I said that day, "I'm an investor now. Who cares about anything that I'm going to do for somebody else? Now I'm an investor." So I started buying rental properties one after. I already started doing it, but I said, "This is it. No longer am I working for somebody else, because I don't want somebody dangling a paycheck in front of my face like a carrot, saying, you know, hey, dance for me." I wanted to be completely financially independent. So from that day forward, it was about 8 years that I finally quit my job. And it was December of 2016 that I'm literally walking out of my office and my new job. It was a great job. I worked for the sheriff's office in Fresno. It was a great job. I was in IT. But as I'm walking out carrying my box of, like, you know, pictures of family and all that good stuff, I feel like I'm walking on clouds. You know, contrast that to lead feet walking toward my boss's office. I'm walking out of this office now, feeling like $1 million, feeling like I had $1 million and I had all the real estate. Everything's great, but I was walking on clouds because of all the hard work was paid off. And now I will never have to work a job again.
So that first time during that first window, when you were having the lead feet walk, sounds like the Green Mile walk, did you have any savings at that time? Or if you had had to, if things didn't work out, did you have 6 months, 12 months, or was it just going to be the end?
So I did start buying. So I had a few rental properties already, which I had a little bit of income coming in, which was, I was like, okay, at least we have a little bit, but we didn't have much savings because I was thinking, you know, just living paycheck to paycheck. And I was like, you know, I'll always have my job. I work for the government. You know, you can't get fired. It's so hard to get fired from the government. But lo and behold, I did. Or, you know, I got laid off. And so, no, we had very, very little. But it was a blessing, like I said, to get that next job because I had such a good reputation, because I networked really, really well. And that's why I love going to FinCon, is meeting great people like you guys, because networking has really helped me advance my career and, you know, getting that second job. But then at the same time, everything about being an investor, I get more deals, I get more money, I get people want to invest with me because I tell people that I'm an investor. So I'm always telling people I'm an investor. But yeah, I had very little money when we got laid off. But now what's interesting, and now is I always, and that's why I try to share with everybody, if you want to be something, don't tell, like if somebody asks you, "Hey, Marcus, you know, what do you do for a living?" You could say, "Well, this is my job. This is what I do." And you can instead, what I like to do is I like to say that I'm an investor. Even if I didn't have any properties, I would still tell somebody I'm an investor. And here's the reason why. I'm an investor because that's the value I put on myself. Like, nobody else gives me value. From my job, I don't get value. I get value in myself. So number one, I'm an investor because I tell people, because that builds my business. But number two, I look at myself differently. I make decisions differently. I'm no longer an employee. And at the same time, somebody might say, "Well, if you're an investor, how many properties do you have?" "Well, I don't have any properties yet," is what I would say. "I don't have any properties yet." Well, so, "Well, how do you make money?" "Well, I have a side job. You know, I have a side job that makes 100% of my income, but it's, I'm an investor with a side job." And so that's what I had to, I changed that shift. Remember when I said there's two decisions I made? One is to start investing.
Yep, yep.
The other one was to network. And that's when I started telling everybody I'm an investor. And that changed everything for me.
You mentioned you already had a few properties even while you had the side job that was your day job. So how did you even get interested in real estate in the first place?
Well, my dad was a contractor, so he had his business. In high school, I'd be working in the summer in the blazing heat building houses. And so I was always just interested in homes. But then at the same time, I've tried the stock market two different times and I've lost my shirt two different times. I realized I'm horrible. I know how to buy high and sell low, which is what you don't want to do. And
so, I was like, that doesn't sound like the right way.
No, it's the absolute opposite. So I decided, I got to try something else. And so I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, which is a fantastic book, teaches you about passive income. I also read a couple other books that really talked about, one was The Richest Man in Babylon, which I love that book. That's a fantastic book, but talks about using your money to work for you as opposed to you working for money. What I decided to do was start at least buying one property. So I took all the money that I had. My wife and I just got married. I didn't have any savings. So I was just living paycheck to paycheck because I work for the government. I'm okay. We got married, and within 6 months, I realized I want to buy one property because I want to make some extra money. So she had a little bit of savings, a little money from the wedding, and I saved a little bit of money, but I took $17,000 and bought my first rental property. I lived in California at the time, in Fresno, California, and bought in Ohio because in 2006, when I first bought, prices were astronomical. I couldn't make any money. But in Ohio, I could buy a good property that made me at least $250 or more in profit every single month.
And how did that conversation go with the wife?
Oh, that's a fantastic question. It was horrible. She hated it. She didn't want to do any of that. So her dad was a teacher and her mom was a stay-at-home mom, completely risk averse. Like she was so risk averse, taught to be risk averse. But what in order to get her to be okay with investing and saying, I'm taking every bit of our money, all of our savings and buying a property, I literally had to walk her through every bit of the business. Like, basically, she's, part owner. So I had to walk her through, but I showed her all the numbers. I showed her how it's going to work, what's going to happen if we get evictions, if we have problems. I showed her how we're going to make money. But after the first one or two properties, she started realizing, hey, it works. Like we're making checks coming in without us working. So that was a huge, huge benefit. That made everything pay off.
Could you actually walk someone through, how did you find a property not in your state as well?
I love specializing in finding properties all over the country. Now, there's a saying that probably many of us have heard. It goes location, location, location in real estate. I completely disregard that because I'm an investor. The truth is, all real estate is local. It may not be local to you. It's local to somebody else. And so what I decided to do was, hey, there are places and people that would live in other states that would actually pay less money for the properties, their older homes or whatever it might be. So what I decided to do was I started using the internet. Zillow.com is a really good site that most people know about that one, but you can zoom in all over the different, all the countries and different states and find good areas of the country to invest in. That's what I do with all my students, because a lot of them are either on the coast or in the really, high priced properties that are around them. So I show them how to invest in other states. So when I was in California, I started in Ohio, bought in Ohio, three different cities in Ohio, then moved on into Texas, then moved into Arizona. And I have students that invest all over the country. So Marcus, your question is a great question. The easiest thing to do is buy a property. Everybody knows you find a realtor, you find a mortgage broker, you put them together and you buy a property. It's very, very simple. That's the easiest thing to do. The hard thing to do is to build the business first. And that business being somebody that's going to run your properties, who's going to make sure that the rents are collected, fixing up the properties, inspecting the properties, and taking care of the properties, finding the right tenants, background checking them, making sure they're the right ones and putting them in your property. That's the hard part. And that's what I would say. If anybody is looking to do this, what we need to do is build the business first with other people doing the work for you, and then buy a property. So now I literally work 30 minutes a month, not a week or a day, 30 minutes a month on all my properties. I have 30 plus properties and I don't do any work other than just review the statements from my property managers and say, hey, they're not stealing from me. We're good to go. Now, what's great is think of a business. If you're going to start a convenience store or like just a regular retail establishment, let's just pick a convenience store. If you go to a convenience store, they have the racks, the gondolas that hold the candy bars. They have fountain machines. They have the cold storage units. They have cash registers. They have employees, bank accounts. They have the business set up. Now, before that, they would not just put a box of candy bars in a vacant space and hope they'd run a business. No, you build the business first, and then you put your inventory in. And so when you're building your business, when you have real estate rental properties that are far away from you, even if it's close to you, you build the business first, and then each inventory, basically one rental property is a piece of inventory, is like a candy bar that you're putting inside the business. So you build the business first, and then you buy the inventory, and one by one, you build up that inventory in your business to make you more money.
So I guess now I have a two-part question, but the first part of that is, it sounds like you're buying sight unseen. Is that accurate?
100%. So the first time, my wife made me fly out to Ohio. So
I didn't mind because
Exactly. I didn't know what I was doing. So I was like, you know, I got to fly out there. So I have 30 plus properties now, and I've literally only seen one of them. So all of them are sight unseen. If, you know, I take pictures, or I have people take pictures. But here's the key. If you're going to be doing this, what you want to do is verify with lots of different advisors, everything from your realtor, property managers, inspectors. Even here's a tip. If you are having something worked on, let's say you're changing out the sliding glass door and, you know, it's broken, so you have to replace it. So you hire somebody to replace the sliding glass door. At the same time, you might have a plumber going in and fixing something. And if it's vacant right now, you say, you call, this is what I literally did this. So this is the exact scenario that happened to me. I was replacing a sliding glass door. Nobody was in there, no tenants. And so as the plumber was going in to fix something, I talked to the plumber. I said, hey, could you do me a quick favor? It's going to take you 2 minutes. Can you go in and open the sliding glass door and close it? Just see, and just let me know if it's in good working order, because it's done. And they'll call back and say, hey, yes, you know, everything looks fantastic. It's really nice. Same thing with like plumbers. If they're fixing the toilet, I'll ask the guy that's fixing the sliding glass door, hey, could you just go flush the toilet and make sure it works? Like, that's the thing you want to do, is use many advisors so that you can see what's going on with all the information from everybody around your property.
And my second one, I'm not sure if I'm asking for the audience or selfishly for my own paranoia.
It's all good either way.
So what's the theory behind, if there's a downturn, are you just thinking that these 30 plus properties, it's very unlikely that 30 people will walk away at the same time? Or what's your risk factor there? Or how do you have your risk tolerance?
That is a fantastic question for two reasons. One, I'll definitely touch on what happens when the market changes, because I started in 2006 and the market definitely changed after that. But then two is the risk tolerance. And I love that question, because some people have more risk tolerance than others. I have a ton of risk tolerance. My wife does not. And so I had to build it in. Now, a little bit ago, I bought 3 single family homes and a duplex. So the very first house, I walked her through every bit of the deal. Now, ever since my business is doing so well, now for 10 years now, maybe 13 years, it's been going so well. I just said, hey, babe, I just bought a 3 single family homes and a duplex off of a seller. And she goes, okay, good. And I was like, okay, that's the beauty about, you know, having the business work right. But when you're talking about something that happens in the market, it's a fantastic question, because it really shows why I invest in real estate. I invest in real estate for passive income. I absolutely do not invest for appreciation. And I'll get to the thought if somebody moves out in just a second. With appreciation, you hope that you're speculating, you're hoping it goes up. With passive income, I always know what my expenses are, the mortgage, the taxes, the insurance, they're fixed. Like, all that stuff is fixed. And I know in general, I could rent it for a certain amount of money. So your income minus your expenses, that difference is your passive income. That's how much money you can put in your pocket. Now, if you're losing money, that's how much money is coming out of your pocket. The question goes into, well, what happens when the economy, something bad happens? Like, what if it crashes? Remember, I bought properties in 2006, 2007. I bought all through that. What's great is when the economy crashes, I buy more properties and I make more money because prices are cheaper. But the properties that I bought before the crash, here's the key. I don't invest for appreciation. I invest for passive income. Now, the question is, what about tenants moving out if they lose their jobs? Well, here's what happens. You know the law of supply and demand. So if the economy crashes, people lose their job, sadly, they're not going to be able to pay their mortgage. They own the home. They're not going to be able to pay their mortgage. They're going to foreclose. Well, where are they going to live? They're going to have to rent. So the demand for rental properties go up, because there are more people that need to rent. So it keeps the prices of rents relatively stable. They're not going to, maybe they might drop, I don't know, 5%, 10%. But at the same time, there are people that's still going to have a job. So because I invest for passive income, I am completely good. Even the properties that I bought in 2006, 2007, and 2008, you know, in the crash, I still own those. And, you know, they dropped. They went probably cut in half, but now they're right back up where they are. And I've made money every single month with those properties.
Huh. Appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And I never thought about it that way. But also, I'm someone who hasn't thought all that much about real estate in terms of looking at appreciation versus looking at the passive income, which I think is a key change. So during those periods, do you keep the rent the same or do you drop it a little bit or do you raise it?
There are plenty of property managers and landlords that would actually want to continually raise rent, which I'm not against that. But what I love to do is have a tenant stay in the property for 5, 6, 10 years. Like if they're staying that long, they're paying off the mortgage and I don't even have to worry about the property. When there's turnover, like if I raise the rents too much, there's turnover. Turnover costs money from carrying costs for the mortgage, cleaning, loss of rents. There's, and if it's an eviction, you know, it just, I'd rather keep somebody in there. So what I like to do is I like to keep the rents just a little below average, even though, remember, I have already fixed my expenses and I know what I'm going to make and I don't buy the property unless I'm making $250. So I'm okay to keep it a little lower because I've already, you know, put that in there. I keep it a little lower because people are going to say, you know what, that's a nice property over there. Or, you know, hey, I might want to move, but man, I'm getting such a great deal here. I want to stay. So I love when tenants stay because I just make money. They pay down my debt and I just keep making money over and over again.
We're taking a quick break from our chat with Dustin to tell you about today's sponsors. Babbel is the number one language learning app that will get you speaking a new language with confidence. It's designed to get you speaking Spanish, French, or 12 other languages within weeks. The lessons are created by humans, not some robot or translation machine that doesn't understand nuance. If you're like me, you're pretty busy and might not have time to sit down for an hour and focus. With Babbel, the lessons are 10 to 15 minutes apiece, which means there's not a huge time commitment to get your language game up. You can try Babbel for free by going to babbel.com or downloading the app. That's BABBEL.com. Start learning how to style on them in a new language today. The University of California Irvine's fall registration is still open. If you've been thinking about bossing up on your skills so you can land that new gig with higher pay or become a better entrepreneur, UCI is for you. Their online classes offer the flexibility and convenience you need so you can juggle life and improve yourself at the same time. They even have certificate programs that can become another notch on your resume, wins all around, and hopefully money all abound. To see their offerings and sign up for a course, visit ce.uci.edu/paychecksbalances and enter paychecks at checkout for 15% off one course. That's ce.uci.edu/paychecksbalances and enter promo code paychecks for 15% off one course. This offer is only valid through December 31st, 2019 at 11:59 p.m. You better get on it. And now, back to the show. How does this work with credit? Because I know there are some people who are probably like, every time I get a loan or I do whatever, that's going to be a hit to my credit. So is my credit score going down? Is it going up? How does the credit side of this work?
So not just your credit going up and down, but then also the government or the IRS allows you to only have 10 mortgages in your own personal name. So on top of that, some banks only allow 4. Like if you have 4 mortgages on your own, if you have 4 mortgages, then that is the cap. Like they won't let you have more than 4 mortgages, or they won't lend to you if you have more than 4 mortgages. But there are banks that actually do. So here's what it really comes down to is being a business owner. You need to be a problem solver. We're entrepreneurs, we're problem solvers. And so the problem could come up, well, number one, my credit's low, or number two, I don't have enough slots to fill up. Like I already have 4 properties. So what we need to do is figure out other ways. Just like I said recently, I bought 3 single family homes and a duplex. Well, I bought it off of a seller and I bought it with seller financing. Now I had enough money, so I was able to buy it with $25,000 cash and the rest in seller financing, a note. So basically they're the bank. So they don't worry about my credit. As long as I'm paying them money, it's totally fine. So there are many, many ways to buy real estate. And what I love to do is show people, because most people don't understand how many different options to find, to fund and buy and rent out rental properties that unless you actually are exposed to it, you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. So what I love is to be able to be very, very creative. And then when you talk about credit, your credit. Yeah, of course, you know, if you have loans coming out of your pocket or loans with money come out of your pocket, the banks, they call it the debt to income ratio. So if you have too much debt and too little income, then that's a problem. But the great thing is with rental properties, you have the debt, but you have the income. You have more income because of those properties. So in the end, it balances out. But at the same time, we just need to be creative and be business owners and problem solve.
And this idea of seller financing, can you talk a little bit more about that? I think it seems a little bit obvious, but can you go a little bit deeper on that? And then how do you even find these people?
Actually, I was just talking with a student literally yesterday. He was wanting to get more. So I already had this really, really fresh on my brain. What we talk about with seller financing are two things. Number one, finding, but then number two, negotiating or getting this to actually worked out. An easy way, if you go to Zillow.com, and as you put in your criteria, you know, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and this certain zip code or area code that you want to start investing in, and then you start looking at the very, get a little more on, if you're, just track with me, if you're looking at Zillow, you see the, you know, price criteria, the how many rooms criteria, all that sort of stuff. There's a more button, or there's basically you can add more criteria. Well, at the very, very bottom, there is something that says keywords. You can type in seller financing or owner financing and hit apply, and it'll find every property in that area that has the word seller financing, meaning the seller is willing to talk to you about them doing the financing. And so we were just like, I can't remember which area of the country it was. It might've been in Memphis. We found at least 5 or 6 in one zip code. And so we were able to find those properties and he'd be able to go after them. So finding them is not hard in a sense. There are much few, far and few between because more of them are regular, you know, for sale. People want the cash. But here's another thing. If you find a property that somebody wants to sell, you can even just ask them, hey, have you thought about seller financing where you're the bank and you make even more money? They might be, oh, I've never heard of that. Tell me about it, because they might be interested. So asking that. Now, the second part is actually following through with a seller financing. Really what it comes down to is negotiating the terms of the sale from the price that you're going to be buying it from them. Then you're also going to get the interest rate that you're going to be paying them, the terms, if there's going to be a balloon payment. Balloon payment basically is after a certain amount of years, it needs to be refinanced and you pay me the entire dollar amount. That's basically what it comes down to. But you need to get all this stuff negotiated with the seller so that they're happy with the deal, you're happy with the deal, and you know the down payment as well. And then you move forward just like if it were a regular bank transaction. You basically give it to the title company. They've done it so many different times. Title company is super easy to find. You find the title company, tell them I'm buying with seller financing. Here's the terms. They'll do all the paperwork. The seller will be second, or they're basically the first lien holder on the property. You'll be the property owner. So it's really, really not that hard. But yes, you can find them, but then you also get to negotiate. And once you do, you release the title company to do all the work.
So let's say that you buy the property. And this is hella interesting to me. And yes, as I was saying before the show, I'm becoming more Cali by the day. Now, for the seller financing, so let's say the property sells for $400,000. Is that person then cutting you a check for $400,000 plus interest? Like, how does that, where does that money come from? Do they already need to have that cash on hand?
So with seller financing, no. I will caveat by saying, I don't like buying $400,000 homes as rentals because I don't make very much money, passive income. And if it's not rented out for 1 month, there goes all my profit. So the type of properties that I like to buy are anywhere from $75,000 up to $150,000. I have $220,000, $230,000 homes, but I like buying in that range, the $75,000 to $150,000, because prices are lower, less money coming out of my pocket, as at the same time, more money coming in. So now when you're talking about buying a house, let's just use my numbers. Let's say you're going to buy a $200,000 property and you're going to do seller financing. So you're going to agree on the price with the seller. It's going to be $200,000. Then you're going to say, well, how much down payment do you need? Because they're not going to just give it to you without any skin in the game. They're going to require whatever that is. It could be 20%. It could be 10%. You could just say, hey, I have $10,000. I'll give you $10,000 to do the seller financing down payment, which lowers the total dollar amount that you're going to be having seller financing minus $10,000, which is $190,000. So for the $190,000, you talk about how long the term's going to be, you know, how many years it's going to be amortized out, how much is the total interest rate that you're going to be paying them, what the payments are going to be per month. And if there's any stipulations, like maybe you could say, well, you know, after 5 years, I want to exercise the right to refinance and pay you all cash, or, you know, so there's a lot of things that you need to negotiate with the seller on, but basically it's just like you're getting a mortgage. They're the bank instead of you going to a bank.
Got it. For people, and there's so many different ways I want to go right now because of all of the questions that are in my head, but for people who are listening to this, they never thought about real estate. They're getting excited about the idea. It's something that they now want to look into. And I know part of what you talk about is the whole process of financing, but maybe that's not even the first step. Where do people start? So they're listening to this episode. The concept of getting into real estate is exciting. What are the fundamentals? How do they get started?
To get started, number one, I would say you need to start with the foundation of your finances. You need to cut your expenses. You need to get rid of debt. You need to increase your income. See, now I'm blessed to have a lot of money, or plenty of money, where I buy properties with cash and then I refinance the money and pull the money back out and then do it all over again. That's an advanced strategy after you have a number of properties. But if you're going to get started, you need to think like an investor. Remember, like I said in the beginning, you need to change the way you think and change the way you do things. So as an investor, what you want to do is you want to increase the amount of money you have in saving for buying investments. That's the main key. Now, a lot of people might tell you, hey, there's great ways to buy properties with no money down. Well, what they're not telling you, it takes a ton of work. Like, literally, your full-time job is finding properties at no money down, and it's really, really hard to do. It's possible, it's just really hard. The easier way, I love making my businesses as simple and easy and hands-off as possible. So I would suggest start saving money, putting aside for investing. From there, if you want to look at a whole, like if you live in New York City, or if you live in San Francisco, or any place that you go, I can't buy a property and rent it out and make money, there are many, many places all over the country that you can. So what you want to do is use Zillow, start looking at the Midwest, and that would be like Indiana, Indianapolis is a good city, Indiana, Ohio, going down to the Carolinas, like all over the Midwest, down in the Southeast, down in, even in Florida, some decent areas that have lower priced homes that rents are high. But use Zillow, find ones that you can basically, and really what it comes down to is income minus your expenses is your profit. If you account for your income and account for your expenses in one specific city, and you're going to be making money on a lot of the properties that you can potentially buy, that's when you go into that city, not fly. Like I don't fly anywhere. I invest all over, but I don't fly anywhere anymore. I just contact people on the ground. But then you contact property managers in that city and you ask them, okay, now this is, I have a business that I'm investing. I'm an investor. Where should I invest? How, you know, where do you say to stay away from? Where should I not invest? Basically, you're asking them to know where the best place is to invest. Then once you get that, then you look in the area, find a realtor. Wholesalers, go on Craigslist, start looking for deals. And as you're looking for deals and you'll find some, then you have your property manager review it, make sure the property looks good, that they're going to be able to fix it up to where it needs to be to rent it out, and then buy the property after the property manager okays it. Because if you buy a property in a place that the property manager is not going to manage the property, then you got a worthless piece of land that's not going to do anything. So you want to make sure the property manager will rent out or manage the property. From there, you buy it, and then you release your property manager and contractors, everything that they work with, to fix up the property, then find a tenant, get it rented out, and then start making money. So that's big, big, broad overview. There's so many little steps in between, but that's a broad overview.
Ah, man. And there's the financing aspect of it, but I, even taking a quick step back, you mentioned putting some money away specifically for investing in real estate. Any guidelines or guidance in terms of how much to stock away? And I know it's all going to depend based on people's budgets, their living situations, the type of properties they're going for, but any thoughts on how much to try to put aside?
Yeah, if you can get up to, and that's a great question because, and you're absolutely right, it even depends on their goals, like what they want to see. And at the very end, like how fast do they want to achieve it? There's so many different scenarios. But if somebody were to start with $10,000, if they could save and scratch their way up, and I had to do that. I started with nothing, and then eventually got up to where I had enough money to buy a property. But $10,000 is a good number. And here's the thing. Some people might say, well, $10,000, man, that can't buy much like in California or, you know, New York or Oregon or what. Well, yeah, but don't buy there. Buy in the places that that money will go much further. Like I said, like even in like Tennessee and even in the Carolinas, they have good properties there. So I would personally say if you had $10,000, I could literally help you find your first rental property and buy it and start making money.
My question would be, would you, and it'll be personal, so that's fine, but would you ever advise someone to take a loan or take a loan against the funding they have? Maybe they live in a home now, take equity out against the home that they have to get started there. Maybe they have an IRA, a 401k, or do you say 10,000 cash?
I am a huge fan of all types of money. Cash is fantastic, but
yes,
also
it is. Yeah,
what I did was I cashed out my 401k, my IRA, basically every bit of stocks. I literally sold it all, even with penalties, and put it towards real estate because I make so, like, hands down, you know, hand over fist, I make so much more money in real estate. In 1 year, I'll make back every issue or every like fee that I paid from everything that I pulled out. So absolutely. So I suggest that it's a little more advanced. You know, some people don't have that risk tolerance, but there's other ways. Like I teach other ways to maybe pull out a little bit at a time or borrow against it and then pay it back. Lots of great things. But I've done this so many times, I can't even count. Every house that I've ever lived in, I've refinanced out the equity, put it in my pocket. And remember, it's a loan. It's not like if I sold the property and made $100,000, I get taxed on it. If it's not a personal residence, I get taxed on it. But if I have a investment property and I pull out $100,000, it's a loan. The IRS doesn't tax me on it because it's a loan. I'm going to pay it back. What's great is that money, then I go and buy other properties. So I've refinanced and pulled cash out of my investment properties, but even my personal residence, which you'll definitely appreciate this, that my wife was not for it originally. But after we had a few properties, then I said, hey, you know what? We already have three or four properties. If we refinance the property, pulled cash out, pull $80,000 out, we could buy two properties and make money. That'll pay for the increase in the mortgage payment, and we'll make money. And I've done that so many times. That's why I love teaching people how to do is use other people's money to make money.
That's a great comment, and I'll get this in the show notes. We had a piece. It'll sound somewhat hypocritical, but I'll try to salvage it here since you set me up with the layup. I'll try to take it to the rim. When should I use a 401k loan to pay my debts? And I'll get that in the show notes. It was an Ask PB question. Thank you to Liz Weston for assisting us with that. But a lot of people don't know if you do have a 401k, a lot of the, I guess I'll call it holders, they allow you to take a loan against your 401k. So you're not withdrawing the 401k. And it typically is a super duper low rate. So mine, for example, I've never had to access it, but I've reviewed it several times. I've definitely looked into the, because I'm like, that money is just sitting there. I think I could do better with it. But like you said, my risk tolerance is very low. I get scared and I log out. It's prime plus one. So prime right now is 5%. So I would basically be taking a loan out at about 6%. There was one point where the loan was down to 3-4% because prime rates, you know, fluctuate with basically how well things are going. So I just want people to be aware that that might be another risk adverse avenue that they could take. But again, like you said, it is a tolerance that they'll have to have because they will be pulling money out of their 401k. But if you can beat 6%, there's your profit rate right there.
Absolutely, Marcus. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I did it, when I pulled that out, all that interest, even though I was getting interest, all that went back into my 401k because I'm borrowing against my own money, correct?
Correct. So the difference being—
It's going back to me, yeah.
Yeah, if you take a loan against your 401k, then you pay yourself back and then your broker will tell you what the terms are. If you withdraw, that's when you take the tax penalties.
Correct. And so— when I have any students, because I've done this too, I initially did the loan. Like I borrowed money and I paid it back, but I realized, man, I just want every bit of it. So anyways, long story short, if you take a loan, it's still good because it's all the interest is going right back in your pocket. So it's another way to make money with your money. So I completely think that's a great idea.
Yeah, and I would only add, similar to that loan, especially like you said, if you make that profit back. Now here's the part where you have to be disciplined. No one's going to stop you from paying it off early. So let's say you take that $10,000 loan against your 401k, you make a $15,000 profit, you could pay back $10,000 tomorrow. Now, most people are going to be like, you know, why don't I just make these monthly payments? Start to get in that slippery slope. But there's no reason that you couldn't pay yourself back as quickly as you make those funds back as well.
And that touches on, I love that part, that point, Marcus, that I think absolutely paying off the debt, or, you know, it's your own debt, but it's to your own 401k is great. But here's the thing. If I had $15,000 that I could pay it off, I don't. And the reason why is I then go buy more properties that make me even more money to pay off all the interest. So every time I have, I even bought homes with a credit card. Now, this was back in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah, literally with 2009-ish, like right before the market crashed, I got one of those, you know, offers for a credit card loan, or you get a credit card and get cash advance. And it said, and I had to read it like 8 times to make sure. I even called them. Are you sure this is the way it is? But it was, I think I had like a $14,000 credit limit and I could pull out 100% of it. And it was 0.013% interest for the life, not 1 year, for the life of the loan. I said, that is a dirt cheap mortgage. Let me go ahead and use that and buy properties with it. So I'm a big fan of good debt and bad debt, the terminology. So bad debt takes money out of your pocket. Good debt, you use that debt that you use other people's money to buy an investment that makes you money every single month, that puts money in your pocket. That's good debt. And so I agree, you know, depending on your risk tolerance, absolutely. It's a little more advanced strategy to do that. But yes, there's so many great ways to invest in real estate.
Yeah, and I know some people are going to hear that. They're probably still recovering right now. it's going to blow their mind. But to your point, you brought this up earlier. Rich Dad, Poor Dad really talks about that bifurcation between good debt and bad debt. Just, I think some people hear credit card debt. It's a no, never touch it. They're probably slapping their hand right now mentally. But he really goes into how you can service debt to benefit you and turn it more into an asset so you can have money that pays you back. And like you said, covering those monthly payments and then making more and more smart investment choices.
Absolutely.
I'll get that in the show notes as well. We have a review for that, and that's at paychecksandbalances.com/books.
Awesome, man. And then we're rounding toward the end here, and there are so many other things that we could talk about. And we did get a listener question that's relevant to this conversation, and I think it might fill in some of the other gaps in terms of some of the other things that we wanted to talk about. This will be anonymous, and the subject of this was buying a house. I'm trying to buy a house, so I called a lender to just pull my credit and tell me what he thinks. He pulled my Equifax credit card that is significantly lower than the other two. My score currently with Equifax is 491, but the other two is 550. Nonetheless, I'm trying to get my credit better anyways. I have 3 credit cards that I've used all the credit on, and I've been late on a car note a few times. Do you think right now isn't my time to buy a house? Should I give myself a year to get my credit in order? What do you say to that?
Now, that is a great question. If you're going to buy a house, now I'm assuming this is going to be for you to live in, so you're not going to be making money. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just, you know, kind of noticing it. So if you're going to be doing this, when you have a lower credit score, your interest rate's going to be higher because they're going to say, hey, this person is not the best of a borrower. We're going to have to get more money up front. So here's what I would do personally. I would do both at the same time, meaning I would start working on my credit. Really quick, easy way to start working on it is instead of having a full balance, like if you pay off your credit card every single month, it's great to do that. So you're not getting into more debt. So definitely do that. But if you have the ability to put a little money each month in the middle of the month before the statement comes due, then it shows you borrow less, if that makes sense. And so I would start, there's so many other ways to build your credit up and to help your credit. So I would personally not worry about too much about credit. I would start building it up. But here's the thing, before I get into whether you should buy it or not, what I do and what I tell all my students is this, you know, when we're buying investment properties, we're going to have at least 1, 2, maybe 3 different companies, mortgage brokers that are going to be wanting to run our credit. But if you already know your general number, like if you know it might be 520 or, you know, whatever it might be, you can, before you actually have them run your credit, tell them, my credit score is, you know, 550. This is my credit score. Don't pull my credit. I'm not going to give you my social security card so you could run my credit. Run with those numbers as if it's 550. Now, I'm not going to hold you to those numbers. I'm not going to say, hey, you quoted me this because I know it's going to change when you pull my credit. But whenever they pull your credit, it does affect. They're going to tell you, no, it's a soft pull, blah, blah, blah. No, it still affects your credit. So as investors, I usually have 3 or 4 different mortgage companies trying to run my credit at one time because I'm trying to find money for other properties. But I tell them only when I'm going to pull the trigger, when I'm actually going to lock in the rate, that's when you can pull my credit. So that will help your credit from going down even further and build it back up. But now the thought is, if you have the ability to buy a home to live in, what it really comes down to is how much interest you're going to be paying with that lower credit score. And, you know, if you might have to have more points, which is basically more of a fee in order to get the loan, you have to balance that out. Now, you can ask your mortgage broker, well, right now it's right in the middle. Like, let's just say they take the lowest one, which would be a bummer, but 490. Let's just say in a year, I can work it up to where I'm a 590. How much am I going to benefit in interest because of that extra 100 points? And from there, you look at, okay, well, how much the payment's going to be, what's the interest is going to be. You have to pencil all that out and then pencil out how much it would cost you to live in a rental property for that entire year without you actually having that property, that you're, because you're renting it out, you're throwing money away, right? I would say throwing, but you're giving money to somebody else when you can put it in your pocket. But here's the great thing. After time, as like I said, you do both at the same time, when you're building your credit back up, in 2 years, you could refinance it and hopefully get a lower rate because your credit's better. Things might happen to where you have more equity and all that good stuff. So I would say do both at the same time, but also pencil everything out to whatever fits your risk tolerance.
I love that, man. And Dustin, it has been awesome having you on the podcast. I feel like I could just keep asking questions. I know Marcus probably feels the same way, but it is that time. So this has been super fun, super informative. Where can people find you around the web?
I have my site that I love talking about real estate and most specifically rental properties. So it's masterpassiveincome.com. And I started that because as I was quitting my job, I had so many people wanting to know how I did it. And then if I could show them how to do it, which I love showing people how to do it, but I knew there had to be a better way that could show more people at one time. So masterpassiveincome.com, as well as I have my own podcast, the Master Passive Income Show, Master Passive Income Podcast, that I talk all about real estate rental properties. So I really just want to help people out because my life has just been so blessed because of these real estate rental properties. So masterpassiveincome.com and the podcast as well. And do you guys mind if I give everybody a free download that's going to help, a free course that they can get them started?
I love free. We love free. Give us free.
Absolutely. Okay. So I want to give everybody the chance to get my free course. It's a downloadable free course. Is basically gets you started down the path. Go to masterpassiveincome.com/free course. It'll get you that download right away. masterpassiveincome.com/free course.
Super simple. Appreciate the gift to the audience. And thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate your time. It's been great.
Shout out to Dustin for coming on the podcast. What a great chat about real estate, given it's something that we haven't talked about seriously before. Loved how he kept it simple. And this really is the first time that we've dove in on the topic. It's come up in roundabout ways in the podcast on previous episodes, but we can tell you right now, it certainly won't be the last. And if you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to share with your network and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening and say a few words about the show. Today's review of the week comes from CJ from Houston, Texas, with the subject line, dope content. And CJ says, I love the message, guys. Your podcast is highly relatable to someone like myself. I've started my financial journey to freedom later in life. We understand. And Paychecks and Balances is a ray of light. Keep up the great work. Thanks. So CJ, really appreciate those 5 stars. And like we said up top, if you've been enjoying the podcast, you enjoyed this episode, make sure you leave us some feedback. Make sure you subscribe. And if you'd like to find us on social, we're on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. And if you haven't already, join our email list by visiting paybal.co/email, where you'll find our weekly newsletter with all sorts of helpful content. And I got a little bit out of order. So if you want to find Marcus, he's on Twitter at TheMarcusGarrett with 1 T and 2 Ts everywhere else. And I am available on Twitter and Instagram at IamRichJones. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.